any anger, emotions, you know, somebody hits on a certain point and you get angry. My question is, it's the anarthas, the lust, envy, greed, lust, illusion, attachment, that is the cause for anger. But sometimes it could be buried emotions, like psychological emotions, childhood emotions, patterns, suppressed emotions that haven't been dealt with. And that, when it comes to a situation, you react kind of incoherently. So my question is it the lust always, or is it suppressed emotions from other things that haven't been dealt with causes also anger in some?
Okay, so when we get angry, is it just because of, say, lust, or could it be suppressed emotions that have been not dealt with?
Yeah,
of course. When you start studying anything, everything can be endlessly complex. That means somebody says alcoholic. Now, we could say this person just doesn't, he's just weak-willed. Now, that could be an explanation for some people. For some people, it might be that they are going through such unbearable suffering in their lives that alcohol offers the only available escape way for them. So, for some people, to give up alcoholism is just maybe increase your willpower. For some people, just get out of the bad crowd. Some people are social drinkers. That they just want to fit into a group, and that's why they drink. They change their social circle and they have people who don't drink, they stop drinking. So their drinking is not so much a craving for alcohol as it's a craving for acceptance. And for acceptance they are drinking. For somebody else, when they are drinking, now while drinking for acceptance, gradually they might become so hooked that they might actually become alcoholic. But even if they use some willpower and get over that alcoholism, unless that need for belonging, that craving for acceptance is dealt with in a healthy way, it's not going to, they might go get away from alcoholism and they might get into something else then. So, similarly, say if somebody is very having a very stressful or a distressful life, and they need an escape way, or they need some relief, and alcoholism is their relief. Unless they find a healthier way of getting relief, maybe that could be meditation, maybe that could be exercise, maybe that could be prayer, maybe that could be counseling, it could be spiritualization of one's conscience, whatever. Unless one finds a healthier way of dealing with that, a healthier way of finding a relief, they will gravitate backward. It's not a matter of lack of will. So you at level one level you could say that every unhealthy desire is a distorted expression of a healthy need. Even when somebody is extremely lusty, they behave like animals. Now it could be that maybe it could be fear of loneliness, it could be buried anger at somebody who rejected them or whatever. We don't know. So we have to have a multi-dimensional approach for dealing with issues. Now, in a general discussion, we use broad categories. And those broad categories are not wrong. It's just that they may not be exhaustive. They may not be complete at times. So if somebody is lusty or greedy or angry, now that's the way it's expressing. But what is behind that, it also has to be analyzed. Sometimes it might just be you deal with that and it's over. Sometimes it might be there is much more below that. So it is not a black and white thing. Each person has to see what's going on. Yes, definitely. Sometimes when a small thing provokes an irrational anger within someone, then it's not that they're short-tempered, but maybe that thing reminds them of something which is towards it they have like a lot of buried anger, suppressed anger. So then we have to see. That's why self-observation is foundational for self-reformation. It's not just that you follow some rules and you'll become purified. To some extent it will happen, But self-observation is required to understand yourself. Okay, this is what is going on actually with me. And if say a purification or attainment of spiritual consciousness were just a matter of ticking a certain set of to-dos, then there would be no personal element of consciousness in it. Personal element of consciousness is not only we have to be conscious, become more conscious of Krishna, we also have to become more conscious of ourselves. Yes, definitely varied issues can be there, but in a general framework, we use the broad labels, broad categories to understand, based on expressed behaviors.
Just genetics also play a role? Like somebody could be genetically disposed to be more in the mode of passion and they react. So just genetic, and some people don't. It's just their biological framework that they just, that doesn't bother them. So does genetics play a role?
Can some people be genetically disposed toward anger?
Yes.
Yes, definitely. And it's also likely that those who get angry will say that I am genetically disposed. So it's, we have to be very careful whenever we outsource blame for our actions to something else. It is at one level comforting. Oh, I am not to be blamed, something else to be blamed. But every time we outsource blame for our actions, we are also outsourcing power over those actions. So we might say, I am going scot-free, but actually I am disempowering myself also. So how much is it genetic? We don't know. Certainly, there are many factors which impel us, but nothing compels us. Impel is to push. Compel is to force. We are pushed. We can be pushed by our upbringing, we can push by our genes, we can be pushed by the community around us, environment, all those things. But we are not forced. We do have free will. And free will means when we are pushed, we can resist. We can even counter push. So it's said, I write on the Gita every day, at Gita Daily. So one article I wrote is that, our past can explain our actions, our past can explain our emotions, but it doesn't excuse our actions. So why I feel angry like this? Maybe there's a past. But if I give into that anger and do something brutal, then that, whatever be the past, that's not acceptable. So we can use it to understand ourselves better, but not to justify what we are doing. Okay? Thank you. Yes?
How can we help a person who is two flares up, or it could be two devotees and their relationship might be getting ruined because one person flares up? And generally, a person who flares up, they're in no mood to, if you try to explain to them that their behavior is wrong, or they're not, they want to blame the other person. So how do we help people in such situation?
Yeah, if some devotee or somebody tends to flare up, how do we help them? I was at a place, and everybody there had a lot of complaints about the leader. The leader gets very angry and yells at everyone and hurts everyone. So then I'm close to that devotee somewhat. So I raised that concern. So immediately he said, I don't have anger issues. People just need to start listening to me. So what happens sometimes is that we feel that my anger is justified. Now even if it is, our anger will be justified, but the way we express that anger may not be justified. So, it's a delicate decision that whether the person wants to be helped or whether the person wants to justify what they are doing. Now, most devotees, it's not, never black and white. There's a part of us which wants to defend what I am doing. There's a part of us which wants to correct what we are doing. So, if we are in an observer kind of position, then a lot will depend on our relationship with that person. And if we can generally see, there is the person, there is their impression, their anartha, and then there is their behavior. Now these three are distinct things. So what is very alienating is if we take a behavior and move from that onto an impression, or we give a label to that impression, and then we label that person like that. If I come and tell someone, Prabhu, because you are so short-tempered, everybody is abandoning this project in Vimaya. I am not short-tempered. That's the first reaction that comes up. So what happens is, we need to separate these three. When we fix a label on a person, immediately that person becomes defensive. So what we need to see is, this particular, start with factual behavior as far as possible. Okay, now when this happened and when you did this, that devotee was terrified. That devotee felt as if, whatever. Start with facts. Now generally, even the facts can be argued about, but broadly speaking there can be an agreement. So generally we need to start with something as objective as possible. And then from that, when you are talking about the impression, at that time don't say that I am here, don't like conflate the impression with the person. Not that I am here, you are a short tempered person. Rather, I am here, you are here, and this is the impression. So I am your partner in helping you fight with this. Means you are a good person, but this anger or this particular impression that is there, that is something which is troubling. So if we do like that, that means start with a specific behavior. And so first separate the three. We often conflate the three. And then it just becomes too much of an attack for the person to tolerate that. So separate the three. First begin with the behavior, and then the impression that is there, the anartha that is there, don't like equate with them, but rather say that this is there, and maybe we could do to this to deal with, we could work on this. And generally, people need to recognize their own triggers and their tipping points. Trigger means, okay, this particular situation tends to make me angry. Now sometimes the triggers might be situation, sometimes triggers might be people. And tipping point means, from the trigger we start getting angry, but tipping point means we just lose all sense. So if we recognize, from the trigger to the tipping point is a journey. Now it can happen, it can go within a moment, it can go over a few hours. But if at the trigger itself we start checking, now this is going to trigger me. This is, say if somebody has had a difficult day, they dealt 10 difficult issues they have dealt with, and then somebody comes with something annoying, and you just get exploded. Now when I am already tired, let's talk about this tomorrow. Know the trigger and try to keep a distance from it. So if we can, so that what I'm saying is that if we stand here with them, then we can help them to identify the triggers. Don't just criticize their behavior, but help them to identify the triggers. And then, for that person, most devotees are sincere. But when we have anarthas, when we have anger or greed, it's almost like fighting an invisible enemy. It's like when that enemy came, when it attacked me, and normally an enemy come and attack us, but this is the enemy who doesn't attack us, who takes us over and then makes us do things. So it's like if we can provide people tools to fight this invisible enemy, then they are ready to fight it. So it's if we can help them identify their triggers, and once the trigger comes, what do you do? What do you do at that time? So there is a trigger and there is an anchor. Trigger is what agitates us. Anchor is what calms us. So it's impossible to another example you could use here for a trigger is like a wave in an ocean. When a wave comes and if we are in the ocean, we can't fight the wave. If we try to use the wave is coming but I'll not be shaken by it, it won't work. But if we turn and find some anchor and use our energy to hold on to that anchor, then the wave won't sweep us away. So similarly, we help them to identify an anchor. Maybe you know when you feel when you start feeling agitated, maybe hear some kirtan or hear some class, maybe hear some passage from some class which you like it. Maybe look at the picture of your favorite deities. Whatever. Find something which can occupy their consciousness, which can absorb their consciousness. Then what happens? That anchor can help them counter the effect of the trigger. So rather than just telling people don't do this, we have to help them identify the trigger and help them identify their anchor. And it's like you identify the invisible enemy and then you identify the weapon with which you defend yourself from the invisible enemy. Then people, those who want to be helped, they can be helped. But sometimes what can we do? These people just don't feel they need help. Then they have to learn their own lessons, unfortunately. Okay. Thank you. Okay, what do we do now? Okay, I think we'll take the questions. Yeah.
Prabhu, can you talk about something about how often a devotee should introspect and how it is going to really help?
Okay.
All the time, yes, no, but you know, in certain situations, and if
okay.
You have steps.
How often should a devotee introspect? I sometimes feel a little uncomfortable with any should question, because what happens, what works for one person very well may not work so well for another person. So there are certain standard practices in bhakti and there can be many additional practices that can help us. But because each of us is an individual, we can see what helps us. So broadly speaking, doing some kind of review is very helpful. So even when I am very busy, I try to do what I call a best worst review. That means that four things. What was the best thing that happened in my life or today? What are the worst thing that happened today? What was the best thing that I did? What was the worst thing that I did? So what happens by this? Even if we can't go through the whole day, at least go through that. This was such a wonderful thing that happened. Sometimes good things happen to us and we forget about them. If we remember them, we can feel grateful. We can feel that life is not so terrible. Otherwise, our mind can make us so negative. What are the best thing that happened? See, even if we look at our memory, our past is not like a flat, endless plateau. If we look at the past, what do we remember? We remember that which is out of the ordinary. Isn't it? We remember the valleys or the peaks. So what we are trying to do is, we are just trying to look at those. So, this is the best thing. And then, why was this the best? You can just do a little bit thinking if you want.
Yeah.
Why did I like this so much? Why am I so happy about this? What are the worst thing that happened? This happened, but why was I so upset about it? Why do you think that? That way you can maybe understand yourself better. So, then what are the best thing that I did today? Sometimes we were tempted and we controlled ourselves, or maybe we worked hard and did some service, made some nice offering, despite difficulties, whatever. What are the best thing that I did? And then what are the worst thing that I did? So the worst thing also cautions us, okay, this is the direction which I might go, I should not go in that direction. So if you just do these four things, that's enough for most of us. Somebody who is habitually more introspective, they might go deeper and they might go over the whole day and look at various incidents and look at that. That takes time, and we have to see whether how productive it is for each one of us. But some level of review of our service, of our day, is helpful.
Why I ask this is what the Kushan Prabhu was mentioning. Until unless a person, whoever is going through the difficulty, until the person do his own introspective, then it's hard if even somebody tells, the person will not really understand. So it's up to us to understand the situation within listen to Prabhu. Sometimes we may not understand what the person is saying until unless you understand yourself.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Like I said earlier, sometimes we believe our own lies. So, like that, we believe that my anger is not my problem, it is this person's problem. So, yes, we can help the unable, but we can't help the unwilling. If somebody wants to do, but they're not able to do it, we can help them. But if somebody is unwilling, we can't help them. Now, of course, we shouldn't assume that people are unwilling. But if we try to help them and they don't, then yes, then we can't do much about it. So it could be that the person is completely unaware, the person is a little bit aware, and the person is already very aware. So they're very already aware, and then they get some resources to deal with it. They're so grateful. Sometimes they're little aware. Then first, the problem has to be explained to them a little bit more. Then they start seeing the relevance. But sometimes if they're not at all aware, then maybe they have to go through the school of hard knocks before they can become aware.
It's like interesting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll come to you. Yes, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to add a
very bold
question. Can we maybe have the questions at the end?
Oh, you said... I thought you'd take questions till
no,
the end.
Yeah, because otherwise we'll sort of lose track, and
yeah.
I guess the talk is on Govardhan Leela, so
okay.
Let's probably talk and then maybe send your questions.
Okay, right now how many questions do we have?
I don't have a question.
Sorry?
I don't have a question.
Okay. Let's take these three, then we have enough. If we're going till...
She doesn't have a question.
Okay, please tell me, yeah.
No, I'd like to ask that also, it's important that we don't look only... onto the trigger, what triggers us, but what is the root cause of the trigger? Because sometimes we can be triggered by something because of something. So for example, we see somebody that is more expert in the service that we want to do, and we are triggered by this, and okay, we are triggered, but what are we triggered by this? Because we are lacking where somewhere someone has more than we have, and that's how we can deal with it. Like, okay, the trigger is there, but if we are just aware of the trigger, then we won't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
But we need to explore the root cause to know if there is something, and what is there something that we can do.
That's true. Good point. You shouldn't just look at the trigger. See, the trigger, every battle has to begin somewhere. And we need to begin it where it is winnable. So if we start beginning, in general, beginning with the internals is very difficult. So at least, okay, this is what provokes me, let me keep a distance from it. And after I keep a distance, when I am not so provoked, then I can introspect. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, the process of self-control begins with external regulation. Tasmatam indriyanya adav niyamya bharatashyava papamanam prajahiyenam jnana vijnana nashanam. Begin first by regulating the senses. And after you regulate the senses, say if somebody is an alcoholic, and now they could have deep-rooted issues of loneliness or whatever. But if their home is next to a bar, now, how much can they introspect with the temptations right next to them? Now, if they want to introspect and find out what is going on inside, that can happen only when they are reasonably away from the trigger. So yes, identifying the triggers is never sufficient. But often it is a necessary first step. Necessary so at least we can get the basic level of peace of mind so that we can look inwards. Yes, both begin and then go deeper. Thank you. Yes, please.
Sometimes anger is just uncontrollable. It's like it's a car without a brake. Something like whatever you want to do, you know the finger is coming, but you try to read or listen some books, spiritual books or chant, but nothing is working out. Or you go for a walk, then his mind is just jotting back and down all the points, what I should bust out if the person is in front of me, something like that. And it's like, and the mind is playing the game, that it pushes us, like, when what you have to say, yes, if the person is in front of you, something like
okay.
that. So how to control anger in the situation if nothing is working out?
How to control anger and nothing is working out. Well, it's like it's like the question itself says there is no answer to the question. Well, I understand where you are coming from. I have also been in those situations, and it's like we have to try something till something works. It's life doesn't, it's, you know, it's Maya, you could say, doesn't fight fair. It's not that you come with this weapon, I'll come with this weapon, let's have a fair fight. Now we come with a weapon, say we come with a sword fight, we come for a sword fight, and Maya comes with a machine gun. What does a sword do at that time? So the forces of illusion are often like that they don't fight fair. So we have to find what works. And that's why you could have, during our normal time, have an array of things. This. Try something till it works. And sometimes, okay, the anger is there, we explode. But then, after it has happened, that time it might just be not possible to do anything. But next time, okay, what put me in that road? Sometimes that situation can't be rectified at that point. It's just gone to a point of no return. But what we can do is, next time I can stop it before it comes to this point. It's like if a truck is moving very fast, it's like a horse. You know, you say the horses are like the senses and the charioteer is like the intelligence. So sometimes the horse may start running so fast and gain so much momentum that it's beyond the power of the chariot to control it. And that time the chariot might get overturned. So in life, no mistake is, you could say, fatal. We can always recover. Because even if we die, there's a future life. So it's nothing is like, in that sense, ultimately irredeemable. No one is irredeemable. So sometimes one battle is lost, just accept it is lost now. But next time, how can I check the horses before they become so fast? So then go over the situation, and it's not that I just got so angry at this point. There's something that happened before. And try to address it at that level. On my website, there's a whole seminar on this. Burn anger before anger burns you. Like a 6-session retreat I did in Brisbane. So you may find something more over there. But one thing for this is, you know, if there are some people who are very close to and within which the anger starts to come very strongly, we need to build some healthy channels of communication wherein maybe once a week, we come together once a week, once a fortnight, we read something spiritual together, we share our hearts, something positive, and then we speak out our concerns. So we don't let that accumulate. Because at a particular time, it is going to explode, and that time it's too late. So we need to develop some regular, healthy channels of communication. And then we can preclude that explosion. Okay, thank you. Yes, so last question, then we'll move on.
I'd like to go back to Lila, this one, Lord Indra and Krishna Lila, and Brahma, Vimohana Lila. How is that Lord Brahma didn't recognize Krishna, or that he's our line Acharya, and he Brahma Samhita comes from him, Ishvara Param Krishna, he didn't get a clue that Krishna is God. So please can you tell what is behind that?
Are you coming tomorrow? Because tomorrow is Brahma Vimohan Lila.
Okay, then can you tell me this one about Lord Indra? Because how he didn't recognize Krishna.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, we didn't put it for charging. That's it. Just 1 minute. So how could Indra or Brahma not recognize Krishna? With respect to our spiritual life, it's not a matter of just like our intelligence is not like a fixed deposit. Like once you invest, you have that money forever in your fixed deposit. Our intelligence is like a stock market share. The value keeps going up and down. So it is not that because we know now, so we'll know forever. Sometimes we hear a point and say, this is such a powerful point, this is like a life changing point for me now. You know, the next time, a few days later, it's like that point which you thought will change our life, we don't even remember that point. So it's our memory which is the basis of our intelligence. Krishna says once the memory is lost, intelligence is lost. Smriti Brahmashad, Buddhi Nasho. So our memory is very volatile. And that makes our intelligence also very volatile. And that is the sadhaka stage, that the intelligence is unsteady. Now, having given this reason, which is like relatable for us sadhakas. And another point over there is that Krishna is playing a Naralila. He's acting like an ordinary human being. And not just an ordinary human being, even Ram is playing that ordinary human being. Ram is at least a regal, he's a king. But Krishna is simply like a cowherd boy. So even Vishnu or Indra, Brahma or Indra, they know that there is a being higher than us. But that being, they usually identify with Vishnu. So, Krishna is not directly involved in the functional management of the universe. Some people argue that, why is Krishna not mentioned in the Vedas? Now, Krishna is of course mentioned in quite a few places in the Vedas. If you go consider the Vedas as an expansive body. But yes, the Vedas are like the official law book, you could say. Now, in the official law book of say UK, the Prime Minister's nickname or pet name may not be mentioned, isn't it? So Krishna is like God at home, and all that he does that is not so well known to the devatas. They interact with God in office, that is with Vishnu. So for them, divinity means Vishnu. And Krishna doesn't look like God, he often doesn't act anywhere like God. You know, acts in such a childlike way at times. So because of that, they also, because they're familiar with Vishnu, they start doubting, is this really Vishnu who has come? And the person who's acting in such a unusual, such an ungod-like way, how can he be God? So that also, because they are not familiar with Krishna as God, they tend to forget. And further, we understand that these are great characters. So, the Lord uses them to teach some lessons. And that means, we shouldn't judge their character only by their mistakes. We don't understand that this is used, that these characters' mistakes are used to teach me some lessons. Say for example, suppose there is a video in which teaches, if you consider a cricket match, say which teaches spin bowling, maybe leg spin bowling. Now, if you are going to show a leg spinner, like spinning the ball and getting a batsman out. Now, we won't just say, we won't, in that video, they won't just show some maybe ordinary maybe street cricketer getting out. They will show maybe a champion batsman getting out. Now, if we look only at that video on leg spinning, we maybe see 100 incidents when the batsman got out. You think, does this batsman ever score any runs? Just gets out all the time. No, if you look at other videos, you see how the batsman scores a lot of runs also. But here, when the stress is to show how expert leg spin bowling is, then you will show how the best batsman gets bowled out by that. So similarly, here, especially in the Bhagavatam, in Krishna Leela, it is especially shown how bhakti is what is most important in approaching God, in knowing God, in loving God. And for if somebody does not have a very high level of bhakti, then even if they have other qualifications very high, still they are not good enough. Still they will be bowled out. So the Bhagavatam is contrasting, say, Indra and Brahma with the Vrajvasis. The Vrajvasis spontaneously love with Krishna, but Indra and Brahma get bewildered. So that's to show that the devotion of the Vrajvasis is so great that it's greater than even these people who are considered so great in the cosmic hierarchy. So it's for the purpose of glorifying bhakti ultimately. So we shouldn't, as compared to us, these are very, very great people. As compared to the Vrajvasis are far, far greater than them. So when something is contrast, this contrast is being highlighted, and this person is in that contrast between Vrajvasis and the devatas are being downplayed. That doesn't mean the devatas are insignificant. The devatas are not like us fallible human beings. Sometimes we devotees say, we are going to go to Goloka. And Vaikuntha. You are going to go to Vaikuntha. We treat Vaikuntha. We start treating Vaikuntha like our backyard. Oh, Vaikuntha is also the spiritual world. Yeah, somebody who goes there also has pure love for the Lord. Just that they may not have love for the Lord in his intimate aspect as Krishna. So that's also a reason this forgetfulness is not like ordinary forgetfulness. So again, this forgetfulness is recounted in the scripture to teach us a particular lesson. Okay. So let's move on with the Brahma Vimohan, with the Indra Govardhan Leela now. So you have done my Vimohan also now. Okay. So we were at the point of, we talked about how Indra got provoked. And it was scandalously disproportionate, inhumanely disproportionate provocation. Now, Krishna could have countered Indra in any way. But Krishna actually continued that campaign of provocation. That means what he did was, so Krishna had Indra bypassed for Govardhan. And then Indra used all his power. And what did Krishna do? Krishna again used the same Govardhan. And he lifted Govardhan, and Govardhan became an umbrella. Now, at one level, it's amazing that Krishna can lift Govardhan. That's Krishna's amazing power. But another point is that when Krishna lifted Govardhan, Govardhan acted as a competent umbrella. And nobody in Vrindavan was hurt. All the Vrajvasis were perfectly sheltered under that umbrella. In fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur goes further and says, not only were the Vrajavasis under Govardhan not hurt, even the Vrajavasis on Govardhan were not hurt. That means not even a single tree lost a leaf. Not even there was no damage on Govardhan at all. So what Krishna did, even his protection of Vrajavasis, first he had told the Vrajavasis, give up Krishna, give up Indra for Govardhan. And now, in a sense, he showed that Govardhan is stronger than Indra. Because Govardhan has protected you from Indra. And our mother Yashoda got anxious. Krishna, how can he lift this Govardhan? So, Krishna said, actually, mother, don't be anxious. No, Govardhan is so happy with all the food that you have given you, that you have given him, that he is himself floating in the sky in ecstasy. I am just putting this finger for show. And Mother Yashoda said, if this finger is for show, then please remove it. And everybody said, no, don't remove it. Don't remove it. Don't remove it. So what happened? When Krishna, at one level, it is Krishna who is orchestrating everything. But Krishna did not use his personal power directly to counter Indra. Krishna showed to Indra that the same Govardhan you consider insignificant, that same Govardhan is countering your power. And it couldn't get more humiliating for Indra than this. Because, suppose say there is a boxing match between two champion boxers, and both of them come ready to fight. And one of them is like flexing his muscles and showing all his biceps and comes marching in. And the other person, just as he enters, just, you know, one punch with the left fist. And that person is knocked out of the ring and knocked out of the match. What happened? It's bad to be defeated, but it's worse to be defeated without even a fight. Isn't it? Or it is worse to be defeated by like a insignificant part of the opponent. So say if there's a champion batsman and he hardly ever gets out, and then, you know, if at least a good bowler gets you out, that's fine. But if a bowler who has never, if a player who has never bowled in his life, he comes and bowls and you get out. You know, I don't want to get out and it's such a batsman bowler. You know, it's humiliating. So what Krishna did is, it was he used Govardhan, but how? It was Krishna lifted Govardhan on his left hand, and not even on his left hand, it was on his little finger of his left hand. And our acharyas go further described, it was not even on the little finger, it was on the nail of the little finger. So Krishna had a nail, and even that nail didn't break under the weight of Govardhan. Ek din maan Indra Kumaro, nak upar Govardhan dharo, naam poro giri hari o radhe sham sham sham. So naam poro giridhari, that Krishna lifted Govardhan. So ek din maan Indra Kumaro is completely crushed his pride. By what? Nak upar, on his nail he lifted up Govardhan dharo. So by this activity of lifting it up on his nail, he showed Indra that Indra was utterly not a match for him. He was not a match at all. It's in Hindi, tu to mere baaye haath ka khel hai. Like, you know, I can defeat you with my left hand. Krishna showed you, I can defeat you with the nail of the little finger of my left hand. So, Indra used his whole power, and Krishna used like a tiny bit of his power. How much power is there in little finger? Indra is not just, after Indra sent all his forces, Indra was still not satisfied. And the forces came back and said, nothing is happening. Indra said, I'll come myself. And Indra then used his personal prowess to attack Govardhan also. And then also nothing happened. So, Indra was completely humiliated by Krishna. Now, finally, I just couldn't do anything at all. All his power was exhausted. All his personal power, all his extended power, everything was exhausted. Then he just gave up. Just gave up and he came back. He didn't know what to do at that time. Eventually, what happens? We all have, there are three modes of material nature. And in every situation that we are in, there is something in our control and something not in our control. So in the mode of passion, we overestimate our capacity to control. In the mode of ignorance, we underestimate our capacity. So when some problem is there, no problem, I'll solve the problem. No, that's often an overestimation. But sometimes a problem is there. Oh, this problem is there, I can't do anything about it. Like sometimes a fire starts somewhere, and then fire, extinguish it, fire. You know, this is, okay, you can find something, find an extinguisher, but they just keep panicking as if they have no control. They can do something. So mode of ignorance means we underestimate our power to control. So what happens is that many people oscillate between this passion and ignorance. Prabhupada said, Rajastamo Guna Era Sabai Acham. When Prabhupada came to the West, he said, he looked at the western coastline and he said, he observed that people are mostly covered by the modes of passion and ignorance. Passion and ignorance means that people sometimes overestimate their capacities. And some people, there's a kind of people who are called manic depressive. There is chronic depressive and manic depressive. Chronic depressive is always depressed. They are like fully into the mode of ignorance. Constantly. But manic depressive are, they alternate between ignorance and passion. So sometimes they are hyperactive, and then after that they become hyperpassive. So now Indra, he had initially overestimated his capacity to control. And he thought, what can these people do? What can these Vrajavasis do? And he just attacked. And then, using all his power, when he just couldn't do anything at all, he gave up, and then he went back. Now this is again, at this point, he had exceeded his boundaries, but still, as I said, Indra had a basic, he was not a bad person, he was a good person, who had got into a bad frame of mind. So when he realized that I've done a terrible mistake, you know, Krishna cannot be an ordinary person. For somebody to resist these powers, resist all my powers, this must be God. And then what do I do? What do I do now? How do I deal with this? So then, at least now his good sense came back. Then now some acharyas say he went to Brahma. So what do I do? Brahma said, you offended in Krishna now. Only somebody who is dear to Krishna, if that person recommends you, only then you will be saved. Then what does he do? He goes to a Surbhi cow. And he just offers respects to her. As compared to Indra, Surbhi cow is insignificant. So he at least now had the grace to humble himself. And when he went and humbled himself, and he told Surbhi cow what had happened. And she said, yes, you please go to Indra, Krishna. Go with me to Krishna. When Krishna sees you, he'll be happy. And then after that he sees me, because of his happiness, he won't be so angry with me. And then you recommend me to him. So he said, okay. Then Krishna took, and then he went with Surbhi cow. And Krishna saw Surbhi and he was very happy. And then Surbhi spoke. She glorified Krishna. Krishna, you are our real Indra. You are Govinda. And then she said, no, Indra is very remorseful. And then Indra offers various prayers. And Krishna speaks very briefly. And Krishna says, I knowingly provoke you so that your pride would be exposed to yourself. And he says, I don't want to deprive you of your position. Go back to your position, but go back to the position with the right disposition. The position that we all have in life, see, we all want to do something worthwhile in our life. And we all feel that maybe if I have more power, maybe if people listen to me more, maybe if I have more abilities, maybe I had more wealth, whatever, I could do so many things more. And it's true. If we have resources, we can do more things. But actually, more important than a better position is a better disposition. If we have a better disposition, Krishna, why will Krishna not give us a better position? Ultimately, Krishna wants his devotees to make the whole world devotional. And Krishna would like to give the best resources in the world to his devotees. But Krishna will not give the world to the devotee as long as the devotee is attracted more to the world than Krishna. Because if Krishna gives us the world, and we take the world and we go away from Krishna. Krishna doesn't want that. So, for all of us, we all could say that we need a better position. That's true. But we also need a better disposition. So Krishna tells Indra, go back to your position, but don't forget that you are my servant. And you enjoy the honor and the luxury of heavens, but do it in a mood of service. Do it in a mood of service. And Indra accepts Krishna's words and he departs. So the story overall, because he is still a godly person who acts in a terribly ungodly way, but still is a godly person, the story has a happy ending. Krishna kills some demons. Krishna never kills a devata, because there is a core goodness to them. But we see that the humility that he lacked initially, when he was, if we do not have humility, then we will have to go through humiliation. The world is such a place that anything external that we get our shelter in, that will be taken away from us. If we honestly admit that this is not mine, I'm currently using it, we have that humility, then if it is taken away, we won't be so humiliated. So he didn't have the humility, so he had to go through that humiliation. But then he developed the humility. The humility to first go to Surabhi and then to go to Krishna. And then when Krishna's purpose was served, Indra accepted his mistake and expressed his humility. Then Krishna did not punish Indra in any way. So the purpose of Krishna is not retribution. It is reformation. Retribution, you did this and you had to be punished for this. Now Krishna is not like a vindictive God. Krishna is a merciful God. So he did not punish Indra in the sense that he deprived him of his position. Krishna helped him to return to his position with a better disposition. And that's how Krishna in this pastime emerges as a greater than Indra. But then we'll see over here that this personal, you could say, the mortification or the humiliation of Indra, it doesn't happen in front of the whole world. Once Krishna is outside in the forest, at that time Indra comes privately and Indra does all this. Now sometimes the Gopas come and see, but the Gopas see from a distance. They don't know who is this, what is this, what is going on. Oh, Indra has come and talk with you. But it's not that Krishna is looking at the Gopas and says, see how I have humiliated Indra. No, it's not that Krishna wants to deliberately humiliate Indra more than what is necessary. Once Indra is reformed, Krishna lets Indra get back to his position. So thus, to summarize quickly, what I discussed in this part was that Indra he exercised his full power, but then he was rendered powerless. Yeah, so Krishna continued his provocation of Indra. You think that you have been slighted because Govardhan has been favored before you, but that same Govardhan can counter all your power. Krishna used the same Govardhan to protect, and not only the Govardhan he used it to protect, he used his own little finger's nail. So you are no match at all to me. So that Krishna completely humiliated, so completely thwarted him in every way. So initially was passion, overestimating his power. But then he didn't sink into ignorance, thinking, oh, life is terrible, what can I do? He actually rose to goodness. And that rising to goodness was that he had the grace, the humility to see best how I can reform. And he went to Surabhi, and then he went to Indra with Surabhi. And Krishna did not punish Indra any further. Krishna gave back to the position of Indra to him, but told him, go there with the right disposition. In our own lives, we often feel that if we had a better position, we could do more. That's true, could be true. But more than a better position, we need a better disposition. And if we develop a better disposition, Krishna, why will he not give devotees the resources with which they can do good for the world? So Krishna did not publicly humiliate Indra further. The purpose of Krishna is never is retribution. It is reformation. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So any more questions? Till what time should we go on?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. Yeah, sure. Yes, Prabhu, we'll come to you.
Prabhu, thank you for the class. 2-part question. One, did Indra not have a guru? And normally I thought devatas have a guru, that they're probably where the guru will come and correct them. Secondly, in another Leela, Lord Indra challenges Krishna again over the flowers when Krishna goes to heaven for Sata, for his wife Sabama, for the flower, and then he gets challenged. Did he not remember what happened when Krishna was a child?
Yeah. So, 3 parts you said, that's 2 parts.
I said 2 parts.
Okay, 2 parts, okay, sorry. So, those devatas have a guru? Well, sometimes Brihaspati is called their guru. Brihaspati is more like their priest. We don't really hear many occasions where Brihaspati is doing katha and the devatas are sitting and listening the katha. It's more that Brihaspati comes and does the priestly rituals for them. So they respect him as a priest, but we don't really see the devatas going very often to get instructions from Brihaspati. Sometimes they often go to Brahma when they are in trouble. Brahma is considered to be a Brahmana. The Brahmastra is not the Astra of Brahma. It's the Brahman, the Astra. So Brahma is more Brahmanical than Kshatriya. The Indra is Kshatriya. So, in general, in the broad, whether do they have a guru? You see, the broadly in the epics, obviously they all had a guru. But the guru is not overemphasized. You see, the Mahabharata is 110,000 verses, but Vyasadeva doesn't spend even half a verse to tell us who is the guru of the Pandavas specifically. What we see is there is a general reverence for Brahminical culture, and they learn from many Brahmanas. The Pandavas learn from Narad Muni, from Vyasadeva, from Markandeya, from so many other rishis. So yes, of course, this one particular guru, but that's not generally the emphasis in scripture. And we see our present Krishna consciousness movement is also moving in that direction. We have one spiritual master, but we learn from so many Vaishnavas. So in a sense, we are returning toward what was the standard in the epics. So that's why the devatas, they may have had a particular guru, but generally that is not stressed in the scriptures. And as now, what about the Indra forgetting? Again, when Satyabhama, as the Pariyat flower is taken. Yes, Shukdeva Goswami uses that to say that such is the deluding power of wealth. That when there one has Aishwarya, one has a lot of wealth, one can keep forgetting again and again. So yeah, it is again circumstantial that it happened, but Indra tends to have a lot of relapses. Yes, true.
So the question is the realization that because Indra misbehaved with Krishna due to lack of personality, Krishna is Vishnu. He does not realize much, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. He did not realize that Krishna is ultimately Vishnu. Thank you. Any other comments? Yeah.
I'd like also to say that there are like many instances in the Krishna Leela when Krishna himself doesn't realize he is Krishna. How will the demigods realize if he himself sometimes doesn't realize?
Yeah, that's the instance of Yoga Maya. Sometimes Krishna, Krishna conceals his divinity. That's true.
No, what I mean, say for example, in the pastime of Damodara, when Madre Yashoda is chasing him with the stick and it is described that he's crying because he's so scared, like he's the god. And at that time, he doesn't realize he's the god. Because in that particular pastime, he's to himself, even just as a little boy.
Yeah, so sometimes Krishna doesn't realize that he's god. Yes. See, Krishna in Vrindavan, say for example, Govardhan in Damodar Leela, he's crying. So Krishna does in Vrindavan whatever is required for enhancing the loving relationship between his devotees. That means, if the devotees remember that he is God, then they can't relate with him as a person, as a loving person. If you're too aware of somebody's greatness, then that inhibits the naturality of the interaction with him. So, in fact, Sunday morning I gave a Bhagavatam about how vulnerability increases lovability. So, I won't go into that, but suffice it to say that in Vrindavan, Krishna does what is required for the enhancement of the love. So that means if Mother Yashoda thinks that he is God, then she cannot feel anxious for him. And when Mother Yashoda wants to play the role of Mother Yashoda is going to play the role of the mother, if Krishna doesn't play the role of a child, Krishna says, you are trying to catch me, I am God, how can you catch me? That will become a complete rasavas. So Krishna plays the role of a child at that time. To perfection. I was going to talk about this in tomorrow's class, but I'll mention it today and I'll elaborate it tomorrow, that this concept of Yoga Maya is a very profound concept. That Krishna Leela, you could say, is like a drama. In a drama, there are various actors. So Krishna and Vrajavasi, they're all the actors in the drama. Every actor has a director. So Yoga Maya is like the director. And you know, when the best actors are those, not just those who make the audience feel the emotion, but the best actors are those who themselves feel the emotion. They themselves feel the emotion, and the genuineness of what they are feeling, that creates the emotion in the audience. So in acting it is said, if you fake it, you make it. The better you fake it, the bigger you make it in acting. It's like that. So it's not faking in the sense, but they actually very deeply experience it. So Krishna is the perfect actor also. So when Krishna is playing the role of a cowherd boy, he fully enters into that role. So he just completely acts according to the direction of the director. So then if you say, if he is forgetting that he is God, then how is he God? But there's a further twist. Krishna is the actor and Yoga Maya is the director. So Krishna is acting according to Yoga Maya's direction. But the director directs according to a script. And Krishna is the script writer also. So Krishna is directed by Yoga Maya according to his own script. And that's why the same Krishna who is scared of his mother with the stick trying to beat him, this who is distressed, why I am tied like this, that Krishna, whose waist apparently doesn't have enough strength to break the ropes that are tying him, that same Krishna's waist has enough, his waist has enough strength to bring down two giant trees. So Krishna can manifest his omnipotence whenever he wants. And that's why it is, so Krishna, even when he apparently forgets that he is God, it's actually by his own plan. And that's how in Krishna Leela, there is Achintya Bheda Bhed. That is, Krishna is not God because he is acting as if he is not God, but that acting is as per his plan. That's why Krishna is thus not in control because he is being tied up, but he is in control because the tying up is as per his plan. So that's how it's Achintya Bheda Bhed in Krishna Leela also. It's simultaneous, Krishna is God and Krishna is not God. So, okay, last question. Stop here. Yes, bro.
Because you brought another question to me. You said Krishna, in the Krishna Leela, Achintya Bheda Bhed, something similar in the Rama Leela as well. Achintya Bheda.
Is Achintya Bheda Bheda in Rama Leela also? Yes, to some extent. And whenever the Lord descends to the world, it's true that he is not always that Ram acts as if God. Ram has divine power, but isn't manifested all the time. Okay. So thank you very much. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Itai Gaur Premanande.
Krishna.